Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 8th Canto, Chapter 3, entitled Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender, Texts 20 and 21. Ekantino yasya nakanchanartam vanjanti yevai bhagavat prapanna atyadbhutam tas charitam srimanganam gayanta ananda samudra magna Tamaksaram Brahma Paramparesam Adyaktam Ajitmika Yoga Ganyam Atinayam Saksman Ivati Duram Anantamajam Paripurnamide. Translation. Other devotees who have no desire other than to serve the Lord, worship Him in full surrender, and always hear and chant about His activities, which are most wonderful and auspicious. Thus they always merge in an ocean of transcendental bliss. Such devotees never ask the Lord for any benediction. I, however, am in danger as a prey to the Supreme Smandikari, who is eternally existing, who is invisible, and who is the Lord of all great personalities, such as Brahma, and who is available only by transcendental bhakti yoga. Being extremely subtle, he is beyond the reach of my senses, and transcendent to all external realization. He is unlimited. He is the original cause. And he is completely full in everything. I offer my obeisances unto him. Purport. Anyami lasita sumyan jnana karmadi anavritam anakulyena krishnam shilanam bhakti uchama. Bhakti asked me to see you. Once you render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain, through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation, that is called pure devotional service. Unalloyed devotees have nothing to ask from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Gajendra, the King of the Elephants, who was circumstantially asking for an immediate benediction because he had no other way to be rescued. Similarly, when there is no alternative, a pure devotee, being fully dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Lord, prays for some benediction. But in such a prayer there is also regret. One who also hears and chants about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord is always situated on a platform on which he has nothing to ask in terms of material benefits, unless one is a completely pure devotee and cannot enjoy the transcendental bliss derived from chanting and dancing in the ecstasy of the Sankirtan movement. Such ecstasy is not possible for an ordinary devotee. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us how one can enjoy transcendental bliss simply by chanting, hearing and dancing in ecstasy. This is bhakti yoga. Therefore the King of the Elephants, Gajendra, said, said Adhyatmika Yoga Kamyam, indicating that unless one is situated on this transcendental platform, one cannot approach the Supreme Lord. The benediction of being able to approach the Lord can be achieved after many, many births. Yet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has awarded this benediction to everyone, even the fallen soul who has to, even to the fallen souls who have no heritage of anything in spiritual life. That has actually been seen in the Krishna conscious movement. Therefore, the path of bhakti yoga is a spotless process by which to approach the Supreme Personality of God. Bhakti alame kahe graha. Only through devotional service can one approach the Supreme Lord. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya shakta mana parta yogi nyunina dasriha sansiyan samagamandita kyachyasita srinati. Now hear, O son of Prita Arjuna, who are practicing yoga in full consciousness of me. With mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt, simply by being attached to Krishna consciousness and by thinking of the lotus feet of Krishna constantly. One can fully understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead without a doubt. Om Agyanati Manasya Gananda Salakir Shakshulamitamina Tosmani Svikandra Indra. Krishna says, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mangupayam Tite. That Krishna gives us the intelligence by which we can come to Him. So we're looking upon Krishna as an active party, not only as the Supreme Lord who is blessing the activities of His devotees. When the devotees are busy serving Krishna and Krishna would be satisfied, He blesses. But that concept of Krishna is incomplete, because Krishna is an active party and Krishna is taking initiatives in our life. Krishna Himself is approaching the devotee. And therefore, the more we serve Krishna, the more we attract Krishna. So this is actually what we are aiming at. We are aiming to attract Krishna. This is the activity of the spiritual world. We see all these devotees who are competing to attract Krishna. In various ways, of course. Srimati Radharani cannot be outdone. So some devotees are assisting her. And particularly, our line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in that spirit of Radha Dasyam, or in that spirit of being the servant of Srimati Radharani, because we can appreciate that no one can please Krishna as much as she can. Therefore, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are in that mood. Let Radharani serve Krishna. Let her be in the foreground and let us be assistants. Gopi Bhartapada Kamaya Dasana Dasana Das. To simply become the servant of the servant 100 times removed, but fully sharing in the transcendental pleasure. It's only possible to be in that mood if one has realized Rishikesha, Rishikenam, Sevanam, Bhakti, Uchite, that the aim of spiritual life is to please the senses of Krishna and not our own senses. And then we're fully absorbed in satisfying Krishna's senses. Then we can be a servant. Otherwise, how can we ever become a servant? Because if we are not absorbed as Rishikesha, Rishikenam, Sevanam, Bhakti, Uchite, then we are desiring to enjoy our own senses, and immediately we become the center. We become the center of our desires. All our desires are then aimed at our satisfaction. Whereas gradually that has to become transformed, where our desires are aimed to satisfy Krishna. So this we are now learning. We are now learning this process of Vaini Bhakti, of following rules and regulations which are aimed at pleasing Krishna. So we bow down, and as soon as we enter the temple room, that is a must, and otherwise there is offense. So it's a regulative principle. So many regulative principles, but just by following them, little by little, we develop our service attitude. Therefore, devotional service is based on dasyam, servitorship. That is the foundation of bhakti. Dasyam, Srila Rupa Goswami explains. Then Srila Rupa Goswami divides that up. He says there is a general mood of servitorship, and there is specific servitorship in the mood of the personal attendant. So, in the general mood of service, we can say, well, what can we offer to Krishna? Water, milk, some juice. Right? But in the mood of personal attendant, what is it that Krishna specifically wants? Let's offer him that. So then it's no longer like what is authorized. Yeah? What is authorized? When the mood is what is authorized, then the mood is basically, what am I allowed to do of the things I like to do? I'll do the authorized things. And so I limit myself, no problem. I'm a pious soul, but I'm not Rishikesh, Rishikeya, Seyanam, Bhakti, Uchite. I'm not completely aimed at satisfying the senses of Krishna. I want to do what's authorized. So I want to do what I want to do, but the authorized thing, so it's blessed, so that I get the blessings of Krishna, so that I will get the mercy, so that I will no longer suffer in the material world, so that I will go back to the spiritual world, where I will enjoy eternally with Krishna, yes. So I can't wait to go back to Godhead so that I can enjoy it eternally with Krishna. So this is not the mood of the gopis. The gopis are simply concerned with, is Krishna enjoying? Oh yes, they are dressing up simply to look extremely beautiful, dressing to kill with the desire to please Krishna. That's very difficult to understand. But everything is done for the sense pleasure of Krishna. So that is Anya Vilasita Sunyam Gyana Karmaniya Namritam Anakul Yena Krishnam Shilanam Bhakti Uttamam. That is pure devotional service. And that is our vow, you can say. We are taking many vows, vows of initiation before regulative principles, 16 rounds. But the real vow that we are taking is that we will dedicate our lives in trying to cultivate pure devotional service and nothing else. Anya vilasita sunya, devoid of anything else, nothing else. So that pure devotional service, that is our meditation. Some may approach it carefully. Some may approach it boldly, and that depends on natures. Right? And both have their pros and cons. Those who are immediately want to jump forward, they may later on find that they have taken a jump which was maybe a bit too large, and then they face difficulties. Those who prepare and carefully proceed, they may move a little slow, but when they move, they make a move that is there to stay. So both these elements are there. But pure emotional service, that is what where we have to go. That is where we have to go. Nothing else will do. That is the prerequisite for the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, everyone's anya vilasita sunyam. Everyone is free from any other desires. No one is exempt from that. And here, it is very rare. Very rare. Rarely attained. Where is a pure devotee? But in the spiritual world, that's the standard, and anything less will not do. And of course, you know, we'll get some mercy in getting there, but still we must focus our mind on this. And therefore every moment is to be used. Avyakti kalatvam, not a moment is to be wasted. Every moment to be connected with Krishna, somehow or other. It goes that way. It is not always easy, but this is what we're cultivating. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada created temples, because in temples there are deities, and then the whole temple is centering around the deities. It's like cooking going on for the deities, parties going on for the deities, and everyone lives with the deities. In temple life, the deities are in the center. And with that, our own spontaneous desires that just emerge, they become secondary to the deity schedule, our own desires. Ooh, sleep. One more minute, which may become one more hour. But in the temple there is mundanity, as simple as that. So, therefore, ashram life or temple life is very favorable for developing Krishna consciousness, this pure devotional service. Therefore, in Srila Prabhupada's time, it was clear that if you wanted to become a devotee, a pure devotee, you move in the temple. So, therefore, everyone moved in the temple. That was just the way it was. Just move in the temple. Right? And then, but then some grihasthas came. So Prabhupada told them, all right, we'll get houses next to the temple. And so in Los Angeles, Prabhupada arranged a little cubicle next to the temple. But virtually speaking, there was no difference, because they also spent all their time in the temple, and they also spent all their time in devotional service in the temple. But, of course, then children came, and more children came, and in some cases, more and more children came. And then it became more difficult to live from the temple, because they wouldn't give very much. Yeah. So, and then everyone was crying. So then devotees started to move out from the temples. That, I remember when that happened. In Vrindavan we had a vice president, and he suddenly decided that he wanted to move out of the temple. And we were just like, he's gone mad. He's gone totally insane. He has everything. And it was a good ask, was it? But you know, he had something for his maintenance. Why in the world did he need to do that? No one understood it. And everyone wouldn't say it, because we didn't want to embarrass him, but we're all thinking, Maya. It's just Maya. Nothing else. But then there was another one, and another one, and just another one. And meanwhile, the preaching was also going on. See, in the 70s and early 80s, this concept of a congregation didn't exist. We never thought that we have a congregation. We thought you have devotees and non-devotees. And devotees, they join the temple. As simple as that. There are a few exceptions, a few devotees on the outside. Some are, of course, they are flaky devotees, compromised. They're sort of also devotees. But virtually speaking, a congregation, we never thought of that. That we had anything to do with that. And then suddenly, somewhere in the mid-80s, we had all these people who would move out of the temple, and basically we considered they blooped and went back into the material ocean. And then somewhere in the mid-80s, what we did, we redefined ISKCON. A talk came up about the greater ISKCON. It's like devotees living outside the temple. The greater ISKCON. And then gradually the gravity point shifted from temple life to outside life. There were more on the outside than on the inside. And then suddenly the norm changed, and that became normal. And then the ones who still lived in the temple, they became fanatics. And it sort of stayed like that. And it's still a bit like that. either fanatics or dysfunctional people. That's basically what you have in the temple of what to do. So here we are. It's interesting how this social development took place. So then you could hear, like, there's no need to move in the temple, you know. Why would you move in the temple? You know, why would you do such a thing? Don't you know that the temple is a revolving door? And that lots of people, they go in and they come out to the other side. Why would you do such a thing? And then you're wasting precious time to prepare for that day when you need your education and your qualifications. So we heard such whispering in the corridors, and people decided, yes, I will not join the temple. No. And some have been devotees for many years and never ever spent a night in a temple. Well, what to say about that? It's okay, it's all right. But nonetheless, it should be known that some things, right, you learn through culture. Some things you don't just pick up from the books. And the temple has a culture. I remember a BYS article about, written by a student here some, I don't know how many years ago, quite some time ago, but still I remember it. It was basically describing that this, the BYS had been preaching nicely in university, probably it was UCT in those days, and then one student decided to spend a weekend in the temple. And then it was a total culture shock. I think it was a lady, but I'm not sure who wrote it. And he wrote that I was prepared. Right? I was prepared for chanting Hare Krishna. I was prepared for rising early for Mangala Arati and do all those spiritual things. But I was not prepared for, like, the culture shock. It was a complete culture shock. And it's like, little things like no toilet paper in the bathroom. Little things like eating with your hands. With my hands, little things, the culture, so many things that the culture, the temple culture. I remember I was new in Krishna consciousness, and I had hepatitis, so I couldn't eat. Regular devotee prasad, because it's all dripping in greasy substances which are not good for the liver. So that was out. So then there was one devotee, he would make some special prasad for me and then put a note, and he would sign these notes with your dog servant. And I go, how in the world, it was too much for me, How can anyone call themselves your dog servant? This is too much. It was too shocking. Now, I don't blink an eye if someone calls himself a dog servant. A dog servant. Big deal. But then it was a shock to me. A dog servant. God, how can he write like this? Is he okay? Suspect, and he might have an inferiority complex or some other problems, you know, something mentally a little extreme talks. Like that, you know, the culture. Satsuru Maharaj describes that he was still Steve, working in the welfare office, and that one day he had to work overtime, and that he couldn't think of any person in the temple who he could ask to save Samprasada. There wasn't one. The only one was Prabhupada. So he rang up Prabhupada and he asked Prabhupada to save Samprasada. And then Prabhupada, you know, he came late, and then Prabhupada was there, and then he said, Swamiji, did you save Samprasada? And I said, yes, yes. And then Prabhupada brought out the plate. And then he put it on the floor in front of him. So Steve was thinking, on the floor, on the floor. I'm not a dog. The Prabhupada was smiling so nicely that then Steve felt so bad that he bowed down spontaneously. And it's the first time he offered obeisances, just to make up for his sinful thought. You know what I mean? We could see, I'm such a wretch, you know, that I can't appreciate his genuine bhakti. Then he bowed down. So the culture, gradually the culture must be absorbed. Because it's very difficult if we are not having the culture. And two devotees went to a restaurant in Singapore, a vegetarian one, and one of the devotees took the other one, and they sat down, and then the menu card came, and then it said various things were on there, including chicken tandoori. And they were like, chicken, no problem. Vegetarian chicken. Perfect vegetarian chicken. Even the bone is in there, and the goosebumps on the skin are there. But fully vegetarian. So, it's within the regulative principles. It's perfectly bona fide, Prabhu. It's autographed. Autographed. But I don't know. I don't know. It may be within the four regs, but still, I think I'll fast. I think it's okay. I'm so hungry. Not really. Not really, I don't think so. I think it's authorized, but possibly, not okay. Just like Srila Prabhupada said that you don't drink water from the bathroom because it's mentally contaminated. But it's water. Water it says in Bhagavad Gita. Water act. Water you can offer. Water act. Yes, but there is more. There is a finer culture that goes along with the simple rules and regulations. And water from the bathroom is mentally contaminated, so it's not for drinking; it's for washing. Washing drink. Therefore, even washing cups in the bathroom is not really on. In India, when a cup goes into the bathroom, it never comes back out. It stays there. It's become a bathroom loader. And that's where it belongs. It lives there from that on. It can move in, no problem. But then it has to live there. But sometimes we see things happening where, this is for Krishna. So the sink in the kitchen is for Krishna. Therefore, we cannot wash any devotee cups. And then they wash that in the bathroom, sometimes even in the toilet. I see. Like, oh. just use the one in the kitchen. That's okay. It's better than that. You know, I know it's not good. Better you have two sinks, but better you use the sink in the kitchen for both, right, than that you wash things in the bath or eating utensils. From that day on, they have become bathing utensils. So there's a culture. There's a culture. And that culture has a purpose. A purpose of to cultivate cleanliness. Prabhupada liked that aphorism, which I think it came from Tagore, if I remember. Cleanliness is next to godliness. It is quite famous on Indian railway stations. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Big shine, railway station, railway platform. So, but Prabhupada liked this and repeated it. And also pointed that out, that at the second initiation, suci, cleanliness, internal and external, was essential. So purity, yes. So gradually, we have to purify our environment and make the whole environment pure. There is no difference between this external adjustment and the internal realization. It's just a matter of time, and the internal will automatically follow. Yes. So it's, and when the internal purity is there, then it is natural that the external purity is also there. And then one doesn't want to eat a vegetarian chicken or sausages or, you know, all the other stuff, you know, vegetarian shish kebab. No, thanks. Very kind of you to offer. We'll just have some rice dal sabji chapatis. But that's so boring. No, that's not boring. That's fine. I'll have it every day. You don't need to go so exotic. To have a vegetarian hot dog. No, thanks. Well, I'm not saying it's forbidden, and I'm not. If somebody likes those things, then, you know, chalo yaar, I'll say, go ahead, but not for me. Because it doesn't transport me to the spiritual world. It doesn't remind me of Krishna. It doesn't make me wander off to Vrindavan. You know, if I eat sabji puri or roti, you know, chapati, then maybe I'm starting to think of Vrindavan, you know, something like that. That would be nice. That's what I want, after all. I would like that at all times, you know, our mind is remembering Vrindavan. Not just the external Vrindavan, you know, and with all its hustle and bustle, but Vrindavan of Krishna. This is where our mind should be situated. It is that Vrindavan that is designed for the pleasure of Krishna. That is the amazing thing of Vrindavan. Everything in Vrindavan is designed for the pleasure of Krishna. So therefore, that is what we want to bring in, that mood of Vrindavan, and that way become residents of Vrindavan, wherever we are, even in Cape Town. You can't just stay in Cape Townian. That's some sort of extraterrestrial species. Cape Town is some sort of awkward planet. Where we cannot stay for long. Just like space travelers for a little while can maybe land on another planet and then have to return. It's like that. We have to return to Vrindavan, to home. So we can help that by cultivation. So this is a more refined culture. So pure devotional service includes that. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was explaining that that actually the naam or the name depends on the dham. The naam depends on the dham. So we've heard that the holy name is not dependent on anything. We've heard that the holy name is completely independent. It doesn't require any other support activity. It's like the bhakti lata is a creeper that grows without support. Normally creepers grow on walls and trees, but the bhakti lata doesn't need any support. It grows on its own. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out that the naam is always residing within the dham. That is the natural residence of the dham. Therefore, the chanting of the holy name will bring us to the dham. And then in the Bhakti Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami points out that the dham is, or Mathura, he says, which is Mathura Dham, is not a location, but it is a state of consciousness. Of course, there is a location, but one cannot even enter that location without being in a state of consciousness. So he points out it's a state of consciousness. So, therefore, I want to stress today the importance of the Dham as the model of culture. My spiritual master also very much emphasized that point. I remember I used to visit him in his room when he stayed in Alachua, when Bhakti Gaudiya magazine was there. He was the editor. And in his room, he had a map of India on the wall. And I said, "Why do you have a map of India on your wall?" Right? It's just a mundane place, in a way. India, right? Map of America, map of India, it's a place of this world. He said, "No, I have it there so that maybe one day I will live there." It's nice mood, nice idea. Appreciating Punya Bhumi, appreciating that it is a special land, a land of devotees, and in that land, naturally, Mayapur, Vrindavan, these are the places. Who cares about India? Are you going to India, this is Kartik? No, I'm going to Vrindavan. I'm not going to India. India is nice. It is a fact that when we are here in Cape Town, we look at Delhi as, as a special place. Oh, Delhi, gateway to Vrindavan. When you come to Delhi, it's already... that smell already reminds you of something else. definitely not a character. And then, pious place. But when we stay in Vrindavan, then we speak about Heli Delhi. Always say, "Today I'm going to Heli Delhi." And like, Delhi is in Uttar Pradesh, UP, and the capital of Uttar Pradesh is Lucknow. And well, you need lots of luck when you stay in that place. Because compared to Vrindavan, it's a sinful place. So Vrindavan is our home, no other place. Because there we can chant Hare Krishna very naturally. There, the entire atmosphere is aimed at pleasing Krishna. So this is what we need. And you notice it, like here in this world, there are so many things that are normal, that have nothing to do with Krishna. And, you know, like if you stay in Vrindavan, you kind of lose touch with those things. You start to dress, you know, and jhanas and things like that. And as soon as you're back in Cape Town, you got a jacket. You know, in Vrindavan, you got some, either you got some of, well, anyway, you got one pair of shoes that really will do. You know, what more do you need than here, you know? Rain shoes, you know, sunny weather shoes, winter shoes, these three pairs to start off with, you know, and then a couple more. You know. It's just somehow or other, Vrindavan is designed for serving Krishna, designed for living simple, designed for simply pleasing Krishna. Yeah, that's what we need. We need that kind of mood here. Prabhupada said, when he was in New York, he said, yes, Vrindavan is such a nice place. Such a nice place. It is such a nice place. But then we go to India, and then it's a big letdown because it's hot and dusty and noisy and so many things, and says, this Vrindavan. No, it's not yet. It takes time to penetrate. One must enter in a reverential mood. One must, one cannot just go, okay, now I'm coming here to see Vrindavan. No, one must enter into a prayerful mood and respect everything and try and see through it. Try and see through the covering. Then one, and be in a mood of service. And then one can perceive. Otherwise one might say, oh, this Vrindavan is not so nice anymore. No, that's the covering to keep out the materialists. And the covering is getting worse because the materialists are getting worse. And this is what's going on. The materialists are getting worse and they come to Vrindavan. So the covering is also getting worse and chases them away. And that's all it is. But if you approach Vrindavan in a devotional mood and you make a sacrifice for Krishna in Vrindavan, then Krishna will reveal himself. And like yesterday, you know, that question, how many pure devotees are there in the world? And some say that are very few pure devotees, but in Vrindavan there are some pure devotees. And my answer was, Vrindavan is everywhere. That's how it is. Vrindavan is everywhere. As Srila Prabhupada explained, the jiva never fell from the spiritual world. We're still there. We never left the spiritual world. We are in the spiritual world, but somehow or other we suffer from amnesia. You know? So we forgot our identity, but we are in the spirit. We're there. As soon as we remember we're there. That's not, you have to travel all the way to the spiritual world. Long journey. No, we're there. So this is what we're cultivating. This is pure devotional service. Okay, now I'll stop. Any questions, any comments?
Guru Maharaj, could you please mention about the effect of satisfying our material sense and the benefit of satisfying the Krishna sense?
When we satisfy Krishna's senses, then Krishna becomes very pleased. Not with the with that sense enjoyment, but with the love by which we dedicate ourselves to pleasing Him. That is what captures Krishna. So that love that goes along with making offerings to Krishna's senses, that purchases Krishna. So if we just satisfy, I must satisfy Krishna's senses, it says so in the scripture. Then Krishna says, nice, very nice, I'll give you some mercy. But he still will hide himself. But when we start to actually please Krishna's senses out of love, then Krishna becomes purchased, he becomes captured. Krishna becomes bound to us. And then you catch Krishna, who is otherwise impossible to catch. So that's exciting. Very exciting. Therefore, this pleasing of Krishna's senses is a very exciting thing. Because it can capture Krishna. Mamata, Krishna is mine. Not I am Krishna's. No. Krishna is mine. Mamata. First, I am Krishna's. That's the first level. Yes. Exactly. From this day on, Krishna, I'm yours. But then, and you just try to get serious, then when you start to please Krishna's senses, then Krishna becomes captured, and one day you'll say, Mamata, Krishna is mine. And then Radharani is proud, proud, and arrogant, you know, Krishna. I wrap him around my finger. He's my obedient servant. Of course, just then, he may disappear. Then we'll discuss on Radha's. Like that. See the point? That Krishna becomes captured. That's bhakti. What do you think about that? It's pretty good, huh? Yeah, it's not bad. Not bad.
So what the whole effect, you know, using our own senses?
Living in our senses, yeah, well, that's habit. Old habits die hard. So it takes a while to get over it. But at one point, you say, forget it. Forget it. Just focus on Krishna's senses. Just like the gopis. Everything for Krishna's senses. More?
Yeah, Maharaj, I'm on that point where you might say of these vegetarian like chicken and stuff like
oops.
That. Oops. I just recalled an interesting session to my head, like I heard about it some time ago. We said something about that, like these vegetarian hot dogs and stuff is an attachment to a sinful culture.
Mm-hmm.
Which
could be perhaps not. No. That's obvious. You know, there's a vegetarian chicken filled with tomato juice. It gets a bit raspy, doesn't it? Yeah. You know. We sometimes have these plays where Narayana Kasipu is killed and the actor has some tomato juice in the mouth and then comes up. It looks quite convincing. So, obviously that is, it's not difficult to figure out. Anybody who, you know, a devotee who was very peacefully munching away on vegetarian imitation chicken, I don't know. Personally, I would offer my respects to that devotee, but I would keep a little distance. I wouldn't get so close. I said, I'll be observing from a distance. Respectfully, but keep a respectful distance. I would.